Hello, podcasters. Jason Agnew here, host of Sunday Night's Main Event. And please don't fast forward because this is kind of important to keeping with your routine. I know a lot of you download the show on Sunday nights or Monday mornings, and there is going to be a change coming up. As you know, we've started a new Patreon in order to get Dan the Mouth Levransky back on the show. Well, we're a little bit far away from our goals, so things are going to change as of SummerSlam weekend. What's going to happen, if you are a patron of the show, then you'll still be getting the show in podcast form right after we finish. I'll put it up online and you get it. However, if you're listening to the show for free, you can do so live. That's no problem. The stream will be out there at TSN Radio. And then if you get the podcast for free, it will be on a 2-day delay. So a 48-hour delay. This is going to start as of SummerSlam. Now, once again, if you're a patron, if you're paying that $1 per show, just $4 a month, your routine goes uninterrupted. The show will come at you via the Patreon feed. Absolutely no change to your routine. But if you're listening for free, then you'll have to wait the 48 hours. So if you've been on the fence about jumping on to the Patreon, then by all means, now is the time. Hit up patreon.com/SNMEradio, and it's a buck a show. That's all we ask. And let's get a few more of you on board and bring back the mouth to Sunday night's main event. And now, on with the show.
The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone, and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Brock attacks Heyman. Get ready for more McGregor madness. And Knox County has elected an evil dentist as their mayor. Welcome to Sunday night's main event, where we recap everything that is pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Jason Agnew here with you. Normally, I'd say I'm part of the draw for this show, but tonight, that's not the case. As we welcome the man that calls himself the draw of the wrestling industry. Yes, indeed, hot off the match of the night at Impact Wrestling's Slammiversary tonight, we welcome Sami Callihan to the program, and we'll talk about that match as well as working as Jeremiah Crane in Lucha Underground, and we even get into his dark days as Solomon Crow in NXT, and he has some very interesting things to say. We'll also be joined by Dave Meltzer for the Wrestling Observer Insider. The Triple Threat tonight will be with Todd Martin of Pro Wrestling Torch and former WWE referee and host of Aftermath, Jimmy Corderis, plus a Tag Team Turmoil edition of Turnbuckle Trivia, and yes, indeed, your phone calls. It's 1-866-729-2562. That's 1-866-729-2562. Interact on Twitter and Instagram. We're at SNME Radio, as easy as that. And find us on Facebook. I put the feedback up there every week. Just search SNME Radio. It's a group. I will approve you, so go do that now. And hey, here's a fun little word of warning tonight. I'm broadcasting from a new studio in Toronto, so if we have any technical glitches, I'll apologize in advance, but it's all part of the fun of live radio. However, all's good right now, so let's get you caught up on This Week in Wrestling News.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Alrighty, well, as I led the show off with, Knox County, Tennessee officially has Mayor Kane. Yep, by nabbing 66.39% of the vote, Glenn Jacobs defeated Democrat Linda Haney to become the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. Jacobs told the Knoxville News Sentinel last month that he may still do a few special things with the WWE after becoming mayor. Much like baseball players, a couple WWE wrestlers had to apologize for comments they made on Twitter many years ago this past week. Ty Dillinger and Cedric Alexander both apologized after old tweets where they joked about rape were found. In 2011, Dillinger wrote, quote, "It's not rape if they're sleeping." Aye. He apologized this week by tweeting, "I have no excuse for my old tweets. I was a different person 6 years ago, and I'm beyond ashamed at what I considered humor. I'm so damn embarrassed, and I'm truly sorry to offend anyone." And in 2012, Cedric Alexander wrote, "It's not rape if you yell surprise." Ugh. He apologized by stating, "6 years ago, I found humor in bad jokes. At that time, it was a harmless joke between friends. In those 6 years, I've become a father, husband, and grown into a much different man. I've offended and hurt many with my past, and for that, I am deeply sorry and apologize for my actions." Okay, so they've apologized. Now, in news of using Twitter for a purpose, Matt Hardy tweeted out that his lower back and pelvis have started to fuse together. Hardy mentioned that it was most likely the result of the repeat trauma that area of his body takes from the leg drop and splash combo that he and Jeff would regularly do in their matches. Not sure what this is to say about his in-ring future, but I'm guessing both him and Jeff are pretty beaten up and, you know, it's not retirement talk, but kind of have to wind things down a little bit. In actual injury news, it looks like NXT has been thrown a curveball for their takeover event at SummerSlam, as Aleister Black is out of action due to an injury that required surgery after he was crotched by Tommaso Ciampa at the house show in Las Vegas this past Saturday night. So that's a very strange injury. Now, at this point, it's unknown how long he's going to be out for. However, a return at SummerSlam for that takeover, considering he just had surgery, that seems very fast to me. So they're going to have to rejig things down in NXT for that main event. After Nakamura's attack on Jeff Hardy this past week on SmackDown, WWE announced that the U.S. title will be defended at SummerSlam in a rematch of Nakamura versus Hardy. Now, in my opinion, it would make sense that Randy Orton factors into that as well, because he's pretty wound into that program. Now, in case you've been overwhelmed by the Evolution promo, don't forget, the women are doing something else in WWE, and it's called the Mae Young Classic. And it's going to be taped this week. Yeah, Wednesday and Thursday, it's happening in Orlando. The final participants were announced this past week and included Allison Kay, that's former Impact Wrestling Knockouts champion Sienna, that's her real name. Don't know what she's going to be going by in the tournament as of yet. As well as longtime Impact Wrestling performer Madison Rayne will be in the tournament as well. Xia Li from China, she was in last year's Mae Young Classic, she'll be in it again. Also returning, Rachel Ellering, who's going to be going by the same name as last year, Rachel Evers, and that is an ode to the real name of her trainer, Lance Storm. His name, of course, Lance Evers. MJ Jenkins, also previously part of the Impact Wrestling roster. Zatara, a masked wrestler from Chile. Hiroyo Matsumoto is going to be in the tournament from Japan. Ariel Monroe, an indie wrestler from Florida, trained by Cedric Alexander. And finally, for local fans from Smash Wrestling, Vanessa Craven, who is going to be in the tournament. And the WWE is already billing her as 6'2". Now, I'm guessing she'll kind of be the giant of this year's tournament, because also reported this week is Jazzy Gabert, the German alpha female from last year's tournament, tweeted out she will not be in the tournament this year. Now, as far as the broadcast team goes, PW Insider reported that Mauro Ranallo is currently planned to be one of the announcers for this year's tournament. We don't know who's going to be sitting beside him, though. And as of right now, in regards to Evolution, we don't know who the commentators of that are going to be, but Renee Young did send out a tweet saying she would be up for the challenge. In more women's WWE news, Maria Kanellis is back at the Performance Center to begin training for her return to TV. Now, in case you don't follow along with People Magazine and TMZ, let me give you the scoop. Nikki Bella is saying that her relationship with John Cena is officially over. In an interview with People Magazine, Nikki stated, quote, "I had a beautiful and loving 6-year relationship with a wonderful man. I have the utmost respect for John, but I know this is what's best for me," end quote. TMZ also reported Bella's house hunting. Maybe she'll get on, like, you know, a real estate show next. In yet another indication that Matt Riddle is headed to the WWE, he lost the Evolve Championship at Evolve 108 on Saturday night. Shane Strickland defeated Riddle in a hardcore rules match. Here's your weekly all-in update. The best friends have been announced for the show. Although their match has yet to be announced, Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor will be on the show. And if you missed it, the matches on the show so far that have been announced are Kazuchika Okada versus Marty Scurll, Joey Janela versus Hangman Page, and a six-man tag match pitting Rey Mysterio, Bandito, and Phoenix against Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson, and Kota Ibushi. Some fun stuff already there. Remember, it's September 1st. It's at the Sears Center in Hoffman Estate, Illinois, and we're still waiting. Believe me, I think we're all who can't get there are still waiting on broadcast details. But Cody has stated both online and pay-per-view options. Ring of Honor announced that Jushin Thunder Liger will be wrestling at Death Before Dishonor. That's a pay-per-view happening in Las Vegas on Friday, September the 28th. They also announced that Kazuchika Okada will be on the show in a 10-man tag with Beretta, Tomohiro Ishii, Rocky Romero, and Chucky T against Bullet Club members Cody, Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson, Marty Scurll, and Hangman Page. In other ROH news, PW Insider reported that Flip Gordon has signed a 2-year deal with Ring of Honor and that Joey Mercury has signed with ROH to work as a trainer and behind-the-scenes producer. For those of you that are saying to yourselves, hey, what happened to Colin Cassidy? Where is Big Cass? Well, you can now call him Big Kaz, C-A-double-Z, as he's taken his first post-WWE booking with Big Time Wrestling. And that is going to be happening at the Spartanburg Memorial Auditorium in South Carolina on September the 21st. Way to make that splash, Kaz. MLW suffered a blow this week due to reduced distribution of their television platform as beIN Sports has been taken off Comcast Infinity due to a carriage dispute between the two sides. Now, if you can manage to see the show, though, here's something to look forward to with MLW. LA Park has been announced for MLW's War Games in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on September the 6th. Moving over to MMA now, a few news notes here, and we'll talk more about these with Dave Meltzer because, my goodness, a lot's going on. Now that his legal woes are out of the way, Conor McGregor will return to the octagon. There was a UFC press conference on Friday to announce Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Conor McGregor for the lightweight title, October the 6th in Las Vegas. Now, also announced this week is a fight with one of McGregor's most famous opponents. After 2 years of sitting on the sidelines, Nate Diaz will make his long-awaited return to face Dustin Poirier in the co-main event of November's UFC 230 from New York's Madison Square Garden. We do not know what the other co of that co-main event is as of yet, but names buzzing around are GSP and Anderson Silva. So, again, talk to Dave about that later in the show. And finally, one final news note here that ties both the wrestling and the MMA together. Brock Lesnar, we told you he's in the drug testing pool. Well, USADA takes things seriously because he's been tested 3 times since entering the pool on July the 3rd. So Lesnar does look to be headed back to the UFC, which makes what's coming up at SummerSlam very, very interesting. We're going to talk about that and a whole bunch more. If you want to get in on the chat, it's 1-866-729-2562. That's 1-866-729-2562. Looking forward to your calls and talking about what happened this week on WWE TV when we return on Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Wrestling and comedy collide at Summer Strikes.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Scott Goldman, and I am the advocate for the reigning and defending champion, Scott Goldman. And here's a spoiler for you. Come Summer Strikes, I walk in as champion, I walk out as champion.
Summer Strikes, Friday, August 17th, 11 p.m. at Comedy Bar. Get your tickets now at SundayNightsMainEvent.com.
This show is live. We're broadcasting audio, and we're talking about wrestling. How about that? This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Daniel Bryan was my rookie, and I was his pro. And the object was for the pros to teach the rookies what it's like to be a WWE superstar. And as soon as that hit the internet just went absurd. How dare WWE put Daniel Bryan as Miz's rookie? Daniel Bryan should be the pro. So then we cut to a couple years later on Talking Smack, where I asked Daniel a question, and he just said, I believe, and if you remember Talking Smack, Daniel Bryan is the one that started everything. He said I have a soft style of wrestling, and he called me a coward. By the way, let me show you a coward. A coward is not a person that goes right to your face and tells you exactly how it is. A coward is a person that turns around and walks away. Sooner or later, it all
gets real. Welcome back. It's Sunday night's main event. That was a clip. You know, I actually went and I was looking for a clip from the Daniel Bryan and Miz feud, and I was going to go pull one this afternoon from SmackDown because I thought the promo on SmackDown was pretty good. And then I go on to the YouTube and I'm looking around. I'm like, check out WWE. And that was actually a clip from the Miz on E! News. So he's doing his best here to push this feud out beyond the walls of WWE. And I believe it was 2 weeks ago, I sat here looking at this feud and just said what I really want to see out of this and what I think, you know, anyone that's been following the product for a few years since Daniel Bryan made his way to WWE, as Miz mentioned there, as a part of the original weirdo version of NXT, was to see the history played out. Now, I was asking for vignettes what I wanted was vignettes. Let's use the footage that we have here, WWE. But right now, both guys doing a good job. In particular, we had the promos on SmackDown this week, and they were well done. And now Miz talking about the history in NXT. Along with that, the Talking Smack is brought in. Now all we need for this is to really remind viewers of what they're getting here and push this feud. It's a great story. They have all this footage. Let's use it. Now, the only thing that I kind of didn't like about the promo is it was pretty clear, and this is going back to the promo on SmackDown, I mean, it's pretty clear that Daniel Bryan has not signed that contract as of yet. So WWE, maybe not all that happy with him, and therefore you get the scripting to coincide with the fact that they're not happy. I mean, in the promo, if you remember SmackDown, Miz said something like, you know, don't sign your contract, please go away, and you can main event gyms and bingo halls. A bit of a dated reference with bingo halls. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, I'm guessing that 90% of the people that listen to this show would prefer Daniel Bryan not to sign. Because the bingo hall that Miz is going to be talking about is going to be Madison Square Garden for Ring of Honor. Let's face it, if Daniel Bryan doesn't sign and he walks into MSG on WrestleMania weekend, that is an instant sellout. You know, there are a few questions. Can Ring of Honor and New Japan together sell out MSG? Can they outdo the same night that you're going to have NXT TakeOver, the TakeOver before WrestleMania? Can they outdo them? And if that were to happen, well, dare I use the catchphrase of yes. Yes, they can. Let's go to the phones. Hanzi is on the line. If you want to get in on it, it's 1-866-729-2562. We'll kick things off with Hanzi. Go ahead, my friend.
Yo, what's up, Agnew? Listen, I agree with you with Daniel Bryan going possibly going to MSG. That would be really, really dope. But it also, let's say he doesn't re-sign, right?
Yeah.
I think WWE should let Daniel Bryan put Miz over, because it will give Miz instant heat for, like, you know, kind of like, maybe this will be Daniel Bryan's, like, last match. Maybe they'll put a stipulation that if Miz wins, Daniel Bryan has to leave, or he doesn't sign, or something like that.
Well, you phrased that very oddly, though,
yeah,
Hanzi, you want Daniel Bryan to put Miz over. The WWE should let Daniel Bryan put Miz over. I mean, they may squash him if there's no contract in place. That's nothing new to the way WWE tries to say goodbye to people if they think that he's going to be a force on another brand.
No, I know. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Agnew, before you let me go, there's just two other things that I wanted just to quickly get your opinion on.
Okay.
Well, the first one being Becky Lynch, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, like, I know, because you've been an advocate of her just being a babyface, and I agree with you. She's an amazing babyface. But if you're going to keep Charlotte a babyface, do you think one of them is gonna flip? And do you think Becky Lynch flips? And the other thing I wanted to get your opinion on, you didn't really cover it, but I just wanted your opinion anyways, because there's a controversy, obviously, on Twitter about Corey Graves' brother at a Rev Pro show. And he got heel heat by using, the gay slurs and all of that type of thing.
Oh.
And my question is, do you think in wrestling to, become, real again, you need real-life type of villains like that, in the sense that you need progressive good guys who are going to call out racism, homophobia, transphobia, and, misogyny and all that? Because there's also controversy with some guy who's playing a white supremacist at an indie show, and I didn't have a problem with it, in the sense that I think these type of characters could exist, but you need more progressive characters. That's what I wanted to ask you, man.
Okay, so okay, I'm going to tackle this one first, then I'll go backwards with Becky and Charlotte. Thanks for the call, Hansi. I was actually just the other day having a conversation in regards to progressive characters and going into sensitive topics like this, but it was actually surrounding the Mae Young Classic and the women's pay-per-view of Evolution coming out. And this person that I was speaking to suggested that, well, maybe James Ellsworth shows up or another male shows up and says that they identify as a woman and therefore should be allowed in. And you take, because there's, gender identity and gender fluidity is an issue. And I mean, I can see something like that to an intelligent audience. It's almost like when you're dealing with such sensitive matters and you're pushing them out to an intelligent audience, it can be understood as to what they are. But I think the concern with what goes on in the world of wrestling is that sometimes, and I'll throw this out, I always used to say when I was doing comedy stuff, stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason. And if you think of that stereotypical wrestling fan, they're not going to understand a lot of what is done. So when you do things in wrestling, it has to be viable on both levels. And I think because of the audience that you're pushing towards, what is just, a character and fake hatred or an act or whatever that is thrown out, and these words that are thrown out can be perceived as real to the audience. And here's the thing. You're definitely not going to see that in corporate WWE land. You might see it on the indie scene, but it's a very sensitive time right now. And as a performer, as a wrestler, I mean, one of my lead stories today was about WWE guys getting in trouble for tweets that they sent out 6 years ago. So as a performer, would you want to be seen with a gimmick like that out there on the indies? Because then WWE is not even going to touch you. I mean, WWE had to get over Matt Riddle and the marijuana thing. They didn't want to touch him because of that. Well, that turned around. He overcame that because he's headed there. So I think it's probably not the right time to be doing that. But I mean, Hansi, on the other hand, I understand what you're saying, because if you watch television and regular dramas, even comedies, those characters are out there in movies. Those characters are there. The problem is wrestling is on one hand, you know it's scripted, but there's always that little hint of real there, because these guys might be characters, but the best characters are extensions of oneself, and you really don't want to be perceived that way. So it's really touchy. I understand what you're saying, but I can't see it happening. And maybe now is not the right time to be pushing those buttons. On a lighter note, Becky and Charlotte. Buddy, Charlotte is a heel. Bring it on. Not Becky. I like Becky as a babyface. That whole angle that they did was done pretty smart this week on SmackDown, where Becky wasn't happy that her friend was thrown into the match because it lowered her odds of winning because Charlotte's so great. Charlotte as a heel, I've always, always loved her as a heel. One thing I want to throw out before we take a break here is the Sunday Night Survey. We're going to talk a bit on the show in the Triple Threat, which is coming up next. I want to throw up Brock and Roman. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk more about the women. But Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar on Monday night, Brock attacked Heyman. Well, as slimy as Heyman's character is, do you think that Heyman character will get his revenge and will turn on Brock Lesnar? It's the Sunday Night Survey, and it is up right now at SNME Radio. So it's on Twitter. It's the Sunday Night Survey. It is pinned. Go vote. Yes or no. Will Heyman turn on Lesnar right around SummerSlam? That is what I'm throwing out there for you. We're going to take a break now. We're going to come back. Triple Threat is bumped up in the show. In the second hour, it's Meltzer and Sami Callihan. Whew. This is an interview, folks. This is an interview. Stick around for that Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
It's the funniest event of the summer. Summer Strikes.
Hello, this is RJ City, the man who pinned David Arquette. If you've seen me on TMZ, then you know I like to do stupid shit, which is why I'm playing Summer Strikes. It's just like a wrestling show, but actually more violent and less predetermined. So quite frankly, it's better than a wrestling show. I don't even know why you're a wrestling fan. You should stop listening to this radio show, and I'll see you at the show.
Friday, August 17th, 11 p.m. at Comedy Bar. Get your tickets now at SundayNightsMainEvent.com.
Is the Triple Threat.
There's gonna be a Triple Threat.
Triple Threat.
Triple Threat match.
On Sunday night's main event.
It is Triple Threat time here on Sunday night's main event. And the two gentlemen joining me, first of all, you know him as a former WWE referee, but of course the co-host of Aftermath, airing right before SmackDown on Tuesday night on Sportsnet. Jimmy Corderas, welcome back to the Triple Threat.
Wow, thanks for having me. I love these, man. These are cool.
Well, there you go. Now, we have a new tandem today, because this has never been a group before. The other member of the Triple Threat, he has been on, but never in this combination, is from Pro Wrestling Torch. That's PWTorch.com. Listen to him, read him there. Todd Martin, welcome back.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. I've taken the pin every time I've been on here, but I'm hoping I do a little better this time. Fingers crossed.
Well, I was going to say we get a DQ, but you can't do that in the Triple Threat. I am going to throw out a very open question to start things off. Normally, I'm very specific in my questioning, but, you know, as we're only a couple weeks away from SummerSlam, and despite WWE promoting Evolution, still, SummerSlam is the first priority right now. And I'm just wondering, and I'll start with Jimmy. Jimmy, what has got you excited about SummerSlam? It's supposed to be one of the four big pillars, and to me, doesn't really feel like that right now, but what's got you going?
Yeah, it's almost like I kind of have, you know me, I'm the glass half full guy. Yes. I try to look at the bright side always. It does not feel as exciting as past SummerSlams, but that being said, I'm really looking forward to, other than TakeOver, which I think we all do.
Let's divert away from the actual event and talk about the night before. Yes, of course. Yeah.
I'm going to surprise people. I'm looking forward to AJ and Joe because of their past history, and I know that they're probably, given the ample amount of time, will deliver on that big stage. I'm kind of curious to see what happens with Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens. That has been very entertaining for me lately. I think Kevin Owens has been one of the bright spots of Raw in the last couple of weeks, and I have this sneaking suspicion somehow. Yes, I know they love the tagline and the T-shirts of Monster in the Bank, but I'd love somehow to see Kevin Owens sneak out a win here and end up with the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Well, I think that that will just make for some very enjoyable television, Jimmy, if that happens. Because, you know, we talk about the fact that WWE is so scripted. But I think in spite of the bad scripting, Kevin Owens still comes up with such great segments to watch just with throwing in little bits and pieces because he's such a great performer. Personally, I think, you know, they are in love with that tagline, and I don't see Owens winning here. Do you see it happening, or is that just a wish, Jimmy?
It's a wish. I'm rubbing the lamp as hard as I can. I haven't found a genie yet, but you know, fingers crossed.
Todd, what are you looking forward to for SummerSlam?
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. I mean, one, in terms of just sort of the thing I've been enjoying the most, Joe and AJ Styles. I mean, two guys that are great wrestlers. I think both very good promos, Joe particularly. And I'm intrigued by the story that they've been doing with Joe, essentially calling out AJ Styles for not being spending enough time with his family. I'm curious where they go with that, and I think you're going to get a great match at SummerSlam. So that's the thing that stands out the most to me. One thing that's a little bit of, a sleeper relative to that is I'm curious where they go with the direction with Charlotte and Becky Lynch and Carmella, in the sense that I haven't been a fan of what they've done with Carmella as champion. Well, what they've done, but also just the fact that he's a champion. And the infusion of both Charlotte and Becky Lynch, it seems like a good opportunity to start breaking off Charlotte and Becky Lynch and leading to a direction with them feuding for the title. And if they do that, I'm curious whether they do that. And if they do, I think that's a much better direction for the women's division on SmackDown. I think would add a lot of energy to the division. So I'm watching, curious whether that's where they end up going, or whether they do the thing where they get, you know, tied up enough that, you know, it keeps Carmella's champion, and then they sort of continue on without the folks as that of the folks of the division.
This was definitely on my hit list to chat with you guys about today. So yeah, they've infused Charlotte into this match. You know, after matches with Charlotte and Carmella, plus the Asuka match, we've just seen Carmella put together a string of awful matches as the champion. And in a broader sense, do you think, because of all this promo for Evolution, like this week we saw a series of very poor matches on television that involved the women. Do you think, Todd, because you brought this up, I'll go first with you, does match quality matter in this Evolution and, you know, pushing the women, or is it just a matter of giving them more TV time?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much it matters to Vince McMahon, because Vince McMahon never cared as much about work rate as other people. As far as what got the women over to where people were more interested in them, it absolutely was a big part of the match quality. The fact that you had a bunch of women that could deliver in the ring and could carry their own. Just giving them more time, in my view, doesn't indicate some sort of change in the way the women are presented, particularly given... and WWE never frames it this way, but a big part of the problem with the women was that they would just hire models who couldn't wrestle and push them based on their looks, and exploit the looks rather than looking for talent in the way that they would tend to look for talent more with the men. And they switched to bringing in and focusing on a bunch of women that really could go and could carry their own. And unfortunately, in the last year or so, we've seen on the main roster much more of an emphasis on perceived looks, you know, sort of, I think, what Vince McMahon's idea of what a bombshell woman looks like, and not much of an emphasis on who can actually perform in the ring. And it's led, as you bring up, to a lot of terrible matches and a division with, I think, a lot less interest, unfortunately. So hopefully they put more of an emphasis on the wrestling, because I think that's a big component in terms of it actually getting over with the people and being enjoyable to watch.
Jimmy, same type of thing for you. I mean, work rate versus TV time. This week on SmackDown, you know, we saw Lana versus Zelina Vega, and there's really no reason to put those two women in the ring. Their best assets are the fact that they're great talkers and great support. Like, they're great managerial characters. Mm-hmm. So in going to Evolution, I mean, you're going to have a stacked card of all female performers. How much does work rate matter here?
I tend to agree with Todd on a lot of points there. I mean, yes, it does matter. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter enough to to put those women in the forefront. I mean, you get the exceptions. I mean, you look at someone like a Charlotte who has the appearance that they desire, mm-hmm. but can also go in the ring. So there are a few women who I guess, for lack of a better term, have both attributes that could appeal to a broader audience. But at the same time, I don't think there's enough of them. And yeah, it's tough going into this evolution. 50 women to fill out this card. This is going to be a daunting task for one Mr. Fit Finley, who works with the ladies a lot. I don't envy him in the least trying to put together something that will be appealing anyways.
Well, I think a lot of those women that we're going to see, you're going to have the flashbacks. I mean, they've already mentioned the fact that Lita and Trish and Beth Phoenix are going to be a part of the card. I'm sure you'll get more than that. And you've also got participants who can get themselves over with the Mae Young Classic. And I've been talking about that a lot on the show tonight because it is actually filming this week. And I was chatting with Dave Meltzer last week and got into a bit of a debate in regards to the winner. I mean, of course, Io Shirai coming in and Toni Storm, who's already, you know, been a part of the Mae Young Classic and was focused on last year, plus the UK tour. Personally, I feel that Toni Storm should come out of this as the winner and get the big push coming out of Evolution. Todd, I'll go with you first. Who is your Mae Young Classic favorite this year?
I'm fine with either of them. In terms of the favorite, I think it would just be more what the WWE's plans are. I mean, they've signed Toni Storm for that little K division, which is sort of like a little bit of an offshoot of what they're doing in NXT. I figure that they'll want who wins the Mae Young Classic to be in proper NXT more than just in the UK division. So that's making me think it might be Shirai. Then on the other hand, they had Kairi Sane win last year, which, you know, they might think, oh, you know, have somebody from a different part of the world win this year, since we had a Japanese, debuting Japanese wrestler win last year. So I really could see it going either way. I think, if it's my call, I think I'd agree with you, and I'd go with Toni Storm.
Jimmy, what do you think? I mean, they've announced all the competitors as of this week. There's a few Impact performers that have been thrown in. You know, Sienna's in there. You got Madison Rain in there. You got the Caitlyn coming back. Who do you think's walking out of this with the Mae Young Classic win this year?
I think we're going to make it a clean sweep here. I think Toni Storm is the choice. And I hate to bring it back to this subject again. She's got a bit of that look, that blonde-haired, you know, look that seems to be what they look for. You know, I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going that route.
You just kind of look at about the Alexa Bliss is immediately getting the push and getting the title, and she kind of falls into that same type of look. Now, on the Raw side of things, though, we're going to keep with the women's division here because, listen, if WWE is focusing on it, so are we. Ronda Rousey will have a television match tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw. Her opponent, which blew my mind, was Alicia Fox, is going to be Alicia Fox. Now, I understood putting Rousey in the ring with Mickie James, a very experienced performer who can guide a newbie through. But Alicia Fox, Todd, what do you expect tomorrow night?
I expect it to be short. I don't have a problem with the decision at all, in that I think that you're not looking at like a long match where you need to worry as much. You're absolutely right. The Alicia Fox is not one of your top picks. You're looking for sort of a more extended match where you need to do a lot of stuff. I expect this to be short, spectacular, and I think that's what it should be. I don't think you want to have, you know, Ronda selling out there. I think you want to just, you know, give her a little bit of taste of Ronda wrestling, particularly given they've spent so much time emphasizing the idea that Brock Lesnar is bad for not being on television each week. So having Ronda Rousey wrestle occasionally on television, I think, works to negate that potential criticism coming up in the minds of their fans, and it gives them something, you know, something special occasionally on television that, you know, given television is so important and the ratings there for where they're making their money. I think it's a good decision across the board.
Jimmy, you know, because you've had the experience of being behind the scenes at WWE, I want to ask Fraser's question this way, because, you know, there was a report out and there was all the stories about Alicia Fox getting into it with Travis Brown. Travis Brown, of course, being the husband of Ronda Rousey. Do you think she's been thrown into this as a bit of a rib?
I would not put it past them, but I think it's more, I don't think that really has as much to do with it as what, a little bit of what Todd said, but also I think in the WWE's mind, their thought process is, yes, I agree, it's probably going to be a short match, a dominating win for Ronda to look really, really strong, and very little, if any, selling. And in their mind, it's her defeating a seasoned veteran on the roster, because we forget that Alicia Fox has been there for a while.
Oh, Jimmy, referring to Alicia Fox as a seasoned veteran is going to blow the listeners' minds.
Oh, I know, but let me preface that by saying in their mind.
Right.
I didn't say in mine, but she is viewed as a tenured veteran.
Okay, yeah.
Let's put it that way, not seasoned. Tenured veteran, so a win over someone who's...
different types of seasoning.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. But I think you know where I'm going with this. It's kind of like someone who's been there for a while, they're familiar with, and getting a win over someone like that instead of someone who they are investing in now and don't want to damage them in any way by having Ronda just completely dominate them.
Gotcha. All right, guys, we can't do one of these without talking about Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, and of course, Roman Reigns. There was an interesting twist this week with Lesnar manhandling Heyman. Now, we've seen Heyman turn on Lesnar before. It was way back in 2002. We've seen that when he aligned himself with the Big Show. I'm going to say a lot of the fans don't remember that. So, apparently, Heyman's got his hands all over this angle now as far as writing and producing. Todd, I'll go with you first. Because of what we saw this past Monday, leading up to SummerSlam, do you think Heyman is going to make a turn?
Leading up to SummerSlam, no. At SummerSlam or after SummerSlam, it seems possible to me. I don't think that he's going to align with Roman Reigns, but Paul is such a talent, and if Brock is going to be moving on to UFC for sort of like an extended basis, which it certainly looks like he's going to, WWE would be wise to continue to take advantage of Paul Heyman. So what I'm hopeful of, and what I think what will probably happen, is Paul breaking off to join up with somebody else, either at SummerSlam or after SummerSlam. If it was at SummerSlam, given I definitely don't think it would be Roman Reigns, that leaves your only two real possibilities is Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens. Neither of which make perfect sense, but either of which I can sort of see some positives to. Alternatively, I could see them just breaking them up, Paul and Brock at SummerSlam, and then Paul figuring out a new protege at some point, in the next couple months. So those are the two scenarios I'm sort of thinking about.
And Jimmy, once again, for someone that, you were there when Paul was there at one point, the guy does seem to have the Midas touch, but it doesn't always work. I mean, Curtis Axel, prime example of that, that just didn't work. Do you feel as though they're going to break apart the Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman duo?
I think for the time being, yes. And Todd mentioned Kevin Owens, which makes me think this is like really interesting, because somebody would say, well, a guy like Kevin Owens doesn't need a mouthpiece like Paul Heyman to talk for him. Well, neither did CM Punk.
And neither did Chris Jericho when you had Owens with Jericho.
Exactly. So that would be an interesting dynamic, because let's say that they finally pull the trigger with Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. He defeats Brock Lesnar the next night on Raw. If we go back to what I said earlier, by somehow Kevin Owens nefariously obtaining the Money in the Bank briefcase from Braun, and Heyman somehow comes out with Kevin and they screw over Roman somewhere there. Because if I'm not mistaken, and Todd, you might know this better than I do, I thought I heard that Brock was advertised for the Raw after SummerSlam.
Yeah, he definitely has been. The question and the speculation has been whether that's a little bit of a swerve on WWE's part to try to make people think that there's going to be something else going on. And that I'm not sure about one way or another.
Okay, so here's my fantasy booking.
All right, Jimmy, go for it.
Okay, Roman Reigns defeats Brock Lesnar. He comes out to celebrate on Raw Monday night. Brock comes out and absolutely obliterates him. Leaves him laying. Here comes Kevin Owens, cash in with Paul Heyman. Thank you very much.
All right, there's the fantasy booker. We'll leave it out there for everybody. Gentlemen, we got to say goodbye for this week. Todd, where can people follow you?
Todd Martin MMA is the Twitter handle.
Love it. And Jimmy?
At Jimmy Corderas on Twitter, and of course, Aftermath on Tuesday nights before SmackDown on Sportsnet 360.
You got it. Thank you, gentlemen. Much appreciated. And we are going to continue on here Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
I'm your friend, and you're not mine. This difference helps me cross the line.
Hey, thanks for finding Sunday night's main event. Quick break here because Dan Lavransky is here in studio with me, and we're trying to bring back the mouth to Sunday night's main event on a weekly basis, and that's why we've done a new Patreon. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. Now, Mouth, one of the very successful Podbean patron things I had done involves turnbuckle trivia. It's been a staple on the show because I'm a trivia guy.
Oh, and I love it, too. I think it's you come up with some of the best questions for people, whether it's just regular history or the forward and backward.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Oh, it's always been one of my favorite parts of the show.
Okay, so here's the thing. The winner of each one of those can win a T-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com. What is your favorite wrestling T-shirt of all time?
Oh, my goodness, Jay. You're really putting me on the spot. I have so many great ones that, I don't even know where to start, especially with Pro Wrestling Tees, because these guys are so fanatical. They create unique designs, and they also make deals with the wrestlers themselves. So, and legendary guys as well as new guys. So they do the Randy Savage shirts, they do Ricky Steamboat shirts, or they do the Kenny Omega shirts, or the Young Bucks, and all that kind of stuff. Like, they have so many great shirts, but really probably the Law one that they did of me with the Ace of Spades and the Mouth. That's probably my favorite one.
We will bring that back if you're on the show. We will bring that back if you're on the show. There you go. The Lavransky shirt could be coming back.
Geez.
The Mouth with the Ace of Spades. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. Sign up for the Turnbuckle Trivia level for your chance to win T-shirts from ProWrestlingTees.com.
You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event with Jason Agnew.
This is my yard now.
On TSN Radio.
I gotta say, I don't hate your hair as much anymore. I don't hate your face as much anymore. Like, you put a little bit of respect on the Revival's name. Finally. You know why? Because we avenged our losses to the Deleters of Worlds. We got a decisive victory over the former WWE Raw Tag Team Champions. And you know what that means? We've now defeated Roman Reigns, Bobby Lashley, Bray Wyatt, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, The New Day. The list goes on and on. We are, without a doubt, hands down, scientifically proven, the greatest tag team walking planet Earth today. Top guys, out.
Say yeah!
Oh, are the top guys back? Finally? Can they become top guys on the main roster? Please, say yes. Because let's face it, the tag division, Raw or SmackDown, just an absolute and utter mess. Now, I mean, I enjoyed the novelty of the B team a little bit, but I don't think that they needed to have the tag team titles. I liked the celebration. I actually thought that Hardy and Wyatt were going to be a more serious team, a better team. But then they lost to the B team. And then this week, though, it was kind of nice that the Revival came in, beat Hardy and Wyatt, and now we get the Revival to the B team, and hopefully the Revival just win. Because then what it should lead to, despite the fact that they've just been nothing since making it up onto the main roster, is the Authors of Pain finding their way to have a feud versus the Revival. Granted, you'd kind of have to flip the Revival over to being babyfaces because the Authors of Pain are not. And I really do not understand what has gone on with the Authors of Pain. Why Ellering was removed just blows my mind. There was an insert promo this week with those two guys, and they were trying, they wrote, it was written for them, sorry, it was written for them in the style that Ellering used to do about turning the page. These guys should never talk. Just never talk. Completely lost. They're nothing more than the Ascension at this point. And on the SmackDown side, in the tag division, they were going to do a tournament, and we just got, the tournament was like a tournament of recycling. Usos, New Day, The Bar, and Sanity. Aside from Sanity, which I thought would be the right move to maybe push them forward. Other than that, it's just, it's like a hamster in the wheel. Over and over and over again, the same matches. And even when a bit of new life is injected, like we were supposed to have with Authors of Pain or Sanity, the teams are ruined before they're thrown into the mix. Let's go to the phones. Jake is on the line from Chicago. If you want to get in on it, 1-866-729-2562. Jake, go ahead.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for taking my call.
Right on.
Yeah. So speaking about bad things about WWE, this Sasha Bailey feud, it's definitely going to be up there for worst angle of the year, in my opinion.
Oh, of course. It's been dragging on forever. And I think that what's happened with the feud is it's been stop and start, and they haven't really, I think they've changed what they wanted to do with the two of them in the feud numerous times while they were going through it, which was why it's extended and it's gone through different directions.
Exactly. And then we got, 2 weeks left till SummerSlam? So we don't are we leading into a program between the both of them? Because, we don't have that much time. And then, every week it's been one day it's this, and then they take a complete 180 turn, and now they're buddy-buddy again. And I don't know, maybe I'm expecting a lesbian storyline for them.
Well, I don't think you're wrong to think that was teased, because it definitely was. There was that vignette where they had made up the 1 week. There was the I Love You vignette, and then it was the week following that really kicked it into gear for me when I was watching. I'm like, this is a strange, flirty, lesbian-type thing that they're doing. And I'm like, fine, but if you're going to do that, it's almost like, and this goes back to the question that I was just asked about, more real life storylines that Hanzi came into play and asked. And my first thought when that angle came about, I'm like, well, if you're going to do that, should you not have performers that are actually lesbians do that angle? But I guess it doesn't matter. It's supposed to be make believe, but there's still something inherently real about wrestling, because these people seem to be playing themselves and do so not only on screen, but also in public appearances. It's very strange. It's something unique and unto itself. Anything else, Jake?
Yeah. Yeah. Just a weird thing. I don't know what to do, man. And also one more thing. To be honest with you, I saw that video when WWE was at MSG a couple weeks ago, and then when Undertaker was teaming up with Braun and Roman. And I gotta say, Undertaker looked he was moving pretty smoothly and looked pretty healthy. So to be honest with you, man, I'm actually happy that he's still around.
Well, okay, you're the one who is. No, fans love him, but let's be honest here, Jake. I think everyone just needs to move along from The Undertaker. Let's put him in the Hall of Fame. Thanks for the call, Jake. We got to go to break. I don't need to see The Undertaker in the ring ever again. I'm fine. I'm done. I think when he left his gloves and boots in the ring, was it last year at WrestleMania? That would have been just fine for me. There's no need for any more. We're going to take a break. Come on back, Dave Meltzer. And don't forget Sammy Callahan. My interview with him coming up in the second hour as well. Stick with us. It is Sunday night's main event, and it's TSN Radio.
Hi, this is Nug Nargang, and you know me from Aftermath on Sportsnet 360. If you've ever watched the show, you've watched me deal with a numbskull like Anthony Carelli. Well, guess what? You can watch me deal with other numbskulls August 17th at Summer Strikes at Comedy Bar. Jason Agnew puts on a great comedy show that's got lots of wrestling references, so you guys can chant and boo and cheer and not pay attention to the show, just like you would at a wrestling show. August 17th, Comedy Bar, Summer Strikes. Don't you dare miss it.
Get your tickets now at SundayNightsMainEvent.com.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
And we are back. It is the second hour of Sunday night's main event. And joining us, of course, from San Jose, the editor of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Dave Meltzer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Dave, I'm going to start. I'm going to flip things around this week, because I think the biggest news this weekend is UFC 227. And we have a new flyweight champion, and this has to be a surprise to everyone. But Demetrius Johnson finally losing to Henry Cejudo. A split decision, Dave. How badly did it look like Demetrius was hurt here?
I had no idea he was hurt until after the fight. I actually probably should rewatch it, because there are people who said that when they rewatch it, they could see when it happened. I think it was around 2 or 3. But I thought it was such a close fight that literally 40 seconds to go, I go, whoever wins this 40 seconds is winning the whole fight. And that was Cejudo. So,
yes.
It's really something. He was champion for nearly 6 years, and to lose it on as close a decision as the title change has been in a long, long time.
Now, it would make total sense to do a rematch, but Cejudo, after the match, went out to, you know, he called out the winner of the next fight, which is TJ Dillashaw, with the injury to Demetrius Johnson. Do you feel we get a, you know, a two-division fight here?
I think there's a chance. I mean, what you basically, there are other matches that you could make. You know, if Johnson was not injured, I would say Johnson deserves a rematch right away because it was that close. But with Johnson being injured, you could do the two-division thing. I think a lot depends on Dominic Cruz. I think if Dominic Cruz is healthy, I would think that that Dillashaw and Dominic Cruz is a bigger fight.
Right.
And then you would have Cejudo, and he's got, you know, he could fight Sergio Pettis or Joseph Benavidez. And then Johnson can be ready, and then, you know, Johnson should get the shot. I mean, Johnson clearly deserves a championship match. I mean, as much as anybody.
Absolutely. Now, probably the bigger UFC news, at least to the mainstream audience, is we had the announcement of Conor McGregor making his return, Khabib Nurmagomedov being his opponent. October 6th, that is, in Las Vegas. You know, I know Conor has backed up everything he said to this point, but considering his lifestyle, Dave, the changes he's gone through, the money he has, Khabib's got to be his biggest challenge. And if I'm, you know, a Vegas odds maker, Khabib's my favorite here.
I think Khabib will be the betting favorite because he's run through everyone. Conor is a very dangerous opponent for Khabib early, you know, until he gets him down. If Khabib can't take Conor down, if Conor's takedown defense is so strong that Khabib can't take him down, Conor will win the fight. I don't know. I mean, look, Khabib has taken everybody down, and they're better wrestlers than Conor. You know, I think that by that, you know, by odds, I would say Khabib will probably win. But this is a fight that's winnable for either guy. It's potentially the worst fight for Conor because if Khabib does get him down, I mean, Khabib is just incredible on the ground. I mean, he'll massacre him on the ground and probably not finish him, which actually gives Conor a chance. But Conor may take, you know, a terrible beating as well. Khabib is no fun to fight. I mean, if you watch guys like Edson Barboza, especially, or Michael Johnson when they fought him, it was like, this isn't like, you know, some guys go, hey, I like a fight. Nobody likes to fight Khabib because you're just on your back getting mauled.
Were you surprised this fight wasn't on November 3rd at Madison Square Garden?
Yeah. I thought it would be November 3rd or maybe December 29th in Vegas. October 6th seemed a little bit quick. I know that was the date UFC wanted. Mm-hmm. They wanted it as soon as possible so they could get another Conor fight as soon as possible because Conor's the cash cow. They want him fighting as often as possible. So, I mean, this was the date UFC always wanted, was the October 6th date. I'd heard that for months, but I just thought it hasn't been announced, you know, so I just thought, yeah. And it's really interesting because we got the big show at the Garden and we had the semi-main event, and I, for the life of me, can't come up with a main event for that card, and I've been thinking about it, unless George St. Pierre's going to fight Anderson Silva, you know, I mean, I guess that could be it.
Yeah, you go with the kind of a legends fight there and use that as your main attraction, which, of course, will draw huge and will get the mainstream attention that UFC adores as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting fight if George wants it. You know, he did fight his last fight at middleweight, and he did win. I think he's got, you know, Anderson's older. I think George has a better chance of winning now than he did when the fight was really big. But, you know, I don't know. I sense George wants to fight McGregor.
That is the biggest fight the UFC has, I think, period, aside from maybe Lesnar and Jones.
I think it's bigger than Lesnar and Jones.
Really?
I think those are the two biggest ones, though.
Yeah. Okay, let's flip over to Daniel Bryan. His contracts. See, so this week we have Miz make all the remarks about Daniel Bryan's contract. Get out of here. Go work bingo halls, etc. He has not signed on the dotted line as of yet, has he?
Not as of 3 hours ago or whatever. The last I checked, he had not signed. No, I don't. I mean, I don't expect him to leave. I mean, a lot of people when you hear they just sign, oh, he's going to go to, you know, being all in on that day, and I really don't expect any of this to happen. It could, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a weird situation. But I mean, he's already said that he expects to stay. It's just a question of, I think really the big holdup is dates. I think that, you know, he wants a certain number of dates, and I don't see any reason why they wouldn't agree to it. So but obviously it hasn't happened yet, so they haven't.
It's just very interesting, you know, when the WWE scripts stuff like that and throws it in. Yes, it brings a sense of real to it, but to me, it's also kind of like, you know, poking the bear. You're going to make Daniel Bryan a little testy and angry about this by working it in here, and it just...
I don't know that he's going to get any... It's going to make a difference to him in that way, but the thing that to me is so weird, it's like they're trying to send a message that, like, if you're not in WWE, you're, like, low rent, and, you know, it's really not the case, you know,
no.
I mean, especially for him or a lot of these guys. I mean, they can have great careers outside of WWE right now, make good money, have great notoriety. In some cases, like Cody Rhodes, do better than they were doing before. And Daniel Bryan, I mean, I don't think he can make the money. I don't think he can make close to the money on the outside as he can, but he can make his own schedule, so there's no issues. He can wrestle who he wants to wrestle. No one's going to tell him who's going to wrestle. He's going to be able to pick that, too. And he's going to be able to wrestle the style that he wants to wrestle and not be watered down, and he's going to be able to do the promos he wants to do, and nobody's going to hand him a script. So there are, you know, from a creative standpoint, there it's actually better for him to be on the outside, but from a money standpoint, it's obviously better for him to be in WWE. And, you know, then there's the issue with the wife, you know, being in you know, with WWE and Total Bellas and Total Divas and him being a cast member and all that stuff. So, that, you know, that's why I expect him to stay.
Right. Well, let's talk about someone else that is currently on the outside and maybe even more on the outside than we think. So I'm watching Impact this week, and we got an ad for the Chris Jericho Cruise. Now, Jericho has also been openly tweeting about Impact and how impressed he was by watching Slammiversary. I follow him on Twitter and saw this feed pop up. Has his tune changed about working outside of the WWE in North America?
He hasn't said that. I sense that.
Yeah, I mean, me too. There seems to be a...
No, you know, Jericho's not going to say... If he's going to do it, it's going to be a surprise. It's going to be out of nowhere. But I sense that... Yeah, that I think he's open. I know that there's a lot of people who are speculating because of that ad and things like that, that maybe, you know, and look... Don Callis is you know, the head guy there, and Chris Jericho got Don Callis that job.
Yep.
So you know, there's a lot of reasons why, you know, he may do it, and like it's you know, Jericho doesn't need the money, and he can do whatever he wants. You know, he can do whatever he wants for fun, and if he thinks it's fun, and he probably would have fun there because look, you know, if he were to go there, I mean, the problem is, you know, if he would go there, he's going to get to do whatever he wants to. No one's going to tell him what to do, like in Japan, where they, you know, they'll tell him a little bit what to do, but he has so much more freedom. And I think it's possible, but yeah, there's, you know, there's no way of knowing. You know, either he's going to show up at Bound for Glory or he's not.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and that would be one. Impact is a Canadian company now. So that might even push him a little bit more to support something Canadian. His buddy Callis is there. Damore's booking. Like, it's a lot of friends that are there. So
a lot of friends that are there. And look, he can do more not in WWE and, again, make his own schedule. He can come and go as he pleases. He can go between concert tours. He doesn't have to go, like, do, you know what I mean? I mean, he can probably pretty much make his schedule in WWE as well, for the most part. He's been around for a long time. So, again, he can, well, you know, he does have a good New Japan deal right now. So, he's doing the cruise. And, you know, here's the thing. This is from a different standpoint, okay? He is doing the cruise. WWE would not help the cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Impact is helping the cruise. Ring of Honor is helping the cruise. There's New Japan guys on the cruise. There's no WWE guys on the cruise. He can shoot an angle on the cruise if he wants to. You know, you can look at it that way.
Yeah, it's quite Chris Jericho, always interesting. Everything he's done is so interesting. I just love watching his career and how he kind of makes his own rules. And he's the one guy who's really kicked down doors and made these rules for himself. It's fascinating. Let's get into someone who seems to be going back to the WWE circus, and that is Hulk Hogan. I mean, of course, all the big news came out a little while ago, but now he was spotted with Kevin Nash and Scott Hall in NWO gear, and he's teasing some big news on October 27th. Any indication about what this is all about?
You know, maybe merchandising NWO again. I don't know. I don't know what else. I mean, back on television? I mean, I guess you could do it. I hate when they go back to the past, but short term, of course, it will work. So, you know, it's football season. Maybe they feel they need something big. You know, Goldberg helped them a lot, and that was from the same era. Hogan's an icon. The NWO is like an iconic brand that people now have a lot of, you know, fun nostalgia about. So, I mean, it does make sense. And again, you know, merchandise and things like that.
Aleister Black is injured, and he already had to have surgery. Do we, at this point, because all I've seen is that he got crotched and he had surgery. Has it come out what the injury is and was?
I don't know exactly what the injury is. That's all I was told, is that he was crotched and he had surgery, and I don't know when he's back. It would, my gut would tell me that if he had surgery, whatever it was a week ago or so ago, that takeover seems impossible, but maybe, you know, no one said that directly. No one said that he's not on takeover.
Yeah, it would, and if he is not there, then you get a real wrench thrown into this Gargano-Ciampa feud, because this was kind of a way of extending it before you got those two in the ring together again.
Well, that's what happens with injuries. You know, there's a lot of ways they can go. And they have a lot of options. They could put somebody else in there and fill the Aleister Black spot.
Would you like to share Aleister your theory,
Black
Dave?
Is, what?
Would you like to share your theory? What's of your Matt Riddle theory?
Oh, I mean, it would be wonderful if they did that. I don't think that they will, but I think it would be, I think the idea of Matt Riddle debuting and winning the championship on his first night in NXT, instant superstar, I think that's just, I think that could be really great. I don't, you know, again, will they do it? I mean, I've heard not even a hint about it. And it wasn't my theory. Actually, somebody came up to me. But when I heard it, it's like, wow, this is actually like a great idea.
I saw you reply to that tweet and then talk about it today. So I wanted to get it out there so everyone knows that it came from a tweet and a reply from the Melts. Dave, what is coming up in the Observer this week?
WWE financials, going through that. A lot of G1 details on that, of course. Probably something on Negro Casas, who celebrated his 40th year in wrestling this weekend. You know, coverage of everything WWE does the next couple of days. And you know, whatever else breaks, and again, you know, Conor McGregor, UFC, show on the weekend, you know, all that stuff.
Well, I look forward to chatting with you next week at this same time when we get to discuss the fallout of Ronda Rousey and Alicia Fox.
That's right. That's tomorrow night.
That's tomorrow night. All right, Dave, thanks for joining us this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, have a great week.
You too. Dave Meltzer, The Wrestling Observer, is where you can find him, WrestlingObserver.com. Get the podcast, get The Observer. It is absolutely excellent. We are going to take a break. Coming back, of course, it is Turnbuckle Trivia time next, and it's a tag team turmoil edition of that. Following that, Sammy Callahan and myself, we go one-on-one. We only talk. It's a very interesting interview because there's another guy, much like Jericho, who's making his own rules. And it's cool to hear what he has to say. And he's on the cruise. Talk to him about that and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's all coming up on Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
If you're a fan of Sunday Night's Main Event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows. Hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today. WrestlingObserver.com.
It's time for everyone's favorite game show.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Go one-on-one and get it done. Sunday Night's Main Event presents...
Everybody hands go up.
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there. And they stay there.
It is turnbuckle trivia time here on Sunday night's main event. Both of our players today, of course, playing for a t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com, the best spot on the net to get your wrestling t-shirts. And our players today, both, of course, are patrons with the new Patreon. Darcy signed up from Sudbury. How you doing, Darcy?
Oh, I'm pretty good.
All righty. Your opponent today will be Brad, all the way from Nova Scotia. Hi, Brad. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks, Jason.
All right. Darcy versus Brad. It's a very Canadian affair today. If I had known, I would have come up with Canadian trivia. But instead, we will be doing a match of tag team turmoil today. We haven't done this in a while. But basically, the way this works is I'm going to give you the tag team, or I may give you the members, and then you have to name the opposite, all right? So, Darcy, you're going to go first. Brad, you're going to go second. And no steals today, because I don't want either of you guys being a cheater and looking stuff up. First up, Darcy. Five questions each coming at you guys. Darcy, Steve Austin, and Brian Pillman together, what was their tag name?
Hollywood Blondes.
That's correct. Very good, Darcy. All right, Brad, over to you for your first question. Lenny Lane and Lodi. I love these guys.
Oh,
so funny.
They're from WCW, but I can't think of their name.
Their name was, I put it there because it is the West Hollywood Blondes. They were actually a bit of a parody of the Hollywood Blondes. All right, Darcy, over to you. Who were the Powers of Pain?
The Barbarian and Hercules.
That is incorrect. It was the Warlord and the Barbarian. Yeah, Barbarian and Hercules, to my knowledge, were never a team. Brad, over to you for your second question. Who were the Faces of Fear?
Ming and the Barbarian.
That is correct. Very good. And I would have not accepted Haku. That is wrong, because this is the WCW team. All right, Darcy, back to you. A little bit more difficult. We're going to go into history here, guys. I don't know how old you are, but let's see if you remember. Stan Lane and Steve Kern.
Oh,
way back, geez. Darcy.
Yeah, I don't have
no guess. All right, they were the Fabulous Ones.
Oh.
Now we're going to go back for you too, Brad. Dennis Corddry, Bobby Eaton, Stan Lane.
Not the Rock and Roll Express, but the other one. Midnight Express.
Oh, you got in there right before the buzzer. All right, I'll give it to you. Very good. Yes, indeed. There are a whole bunch of older fans that were about to smash their radios. if you did not get that right. All right, Darcy, let's get back in this. We're going to go with some Attitude Era stuff for you here. Terry Runnels, Jacqueline, and Ryan Shamrock together made this team. What was their faction name?
Oh,
any guess, Darcy?
I don't remember.
It's PMS. Pretty Mean Sisters. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
All right, Brad, we're going to go to you here. If you get this, you will eliminate Darcy. And I need to know the name of Coco Beware and Owen Hart.
High Energy.
That is correct. Very good. High Energy is the correct answer, and that is a 3-1 win for Brad defeating Darcy. Brad, congratulations. A t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com. Darcy, thank you very much for playing the game. Guys, great game. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Jason.
And once again, if you'd like to be a player, if you sat there and thought, I know all of these tag teams, it could be the game you play. And if you want to be on Turnbuckle Trivia, just hit up patreon.com/SNME Radio. Taking a break, coming back with more. It's Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Your love lifting me higher than I've ever been lifting before.
Thanks for listening to Sunday night's main event. Just a quick break here. Jason Agnew in studio. Across from me, Dan the Mouth of Ransky, the man that we are trying to bring back to this show.
Bring back the mouth. Bring back the mouth.
And we can do that for $1 a show, which is what we're asking for, right, Mouth?
That is absolutely amazing. $1 a show. I mean, think of it. You can't even buy a cup of coffee for $1. In fact, I don't even know what you can buy for $1 nowadays. You can't ride the transit. You couldn't buy a cup of coffee. I mean, this is a fantastic deal. Me and Jay together every week, giving you all the wrestling news, reviewing all the big shows. I mean, $1 a show.
And with that level, you also get access to all the Patreon-exclusive podcasts, Mae Young Classic, All In, and of course, Mouth and I have big plans to get up and have a sleepover till 4 a.m., and then we're going to watch WWE's Australian show and do that. Right, Mouth?
You better have a lot of food and beer for that, Jay.
Just check out patreon.com/SNMEradio. We thank you for your contributions.
It's like a railroad spike. More importantly, what the hell is he going to do with those?
What do you think he's going to do with them, Josh?
I don't want to find out.
He's going to try to kill Pentagon.
She's ripping the mask of Pentagon to get that railroad spike in his forehead and his face.
The cavalcade of booze pouring down on Callahan as he tries to unmask Pentagon.
What is wrong with this man?
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event right here on TSN Radio. And yep, it is finally time. Earlier today, I had the chance to sit down and chat with Sammy Callahan from, well, MLW, Impact Wrestling, Lucha Underground, formerly of NXT. We're going to talk about all of that. So here is my conversation with The Draw, Sammy Callahan. You're coming off what was an incredible match a couple weeks ago at Slammiversary for Impact Wrestling. And I want to start here because this card, Slammiversary, involved three hardcore matches and you were the third of three. And I'm just wondering, like, how yourself and Pentagon, as well as the other guys on the card, you know, you planned out your match to know that it could follow those other two hardcore matches.
Oh, I don't really care what card I'm on anywhere in the world, any spot I'm on, first match or last match. Nine times out of ten, there's not going to be people able to do what I do and get the responses that I do. That's why I am Draw, and that's why I am one of the most booked wrestlers on the planet, because I have that replay factor. I can go to multiple companies multiple times and continue to get good reactions.
So how much involvement do you have in regards to putting the match together? Like, at Slammiversary, you know, there are agents there, of course, DeMore and Callis working with that company now. Do you know the spots that are coming before you in the night, or is it just you and Pentagon going out there and just doing your thing, regardless of what everybody else is doing?
Me and Pentagon's going out there, we're doing us, because no one's going to be able to do us better than us.
Now, I was surprised to see, I mean, it's funny, you know, Kevin Sullivan managed to bring out a spike in Battle Riot, and we'll get there in a minute, but who had the idea for bringing out the spikes at Slammiversary?
That's actually something that kind of just happens. With me and Pentagon getting the ring, a lot of times things aren't planned and things just seem to happen. But it's one of those things, like, whenever we do get in the ring, it's something special. We have that intangible we can't teach people. He's the yin to my yang, the peanut butter to my jelly, like my true, like, arch nemesis when you really look at it. And there's not one feud in the world that I think that can do exactly what we do when we do it.
And you guys really did raise the stakes at Slammiversary because you did the hair versus mask match. Who presented that to you, and how did you feel about losing your hair?
Things happen like that, man. It's one of those things that it was brought to us, and we were told we were going to be in this big match at Slammiversary. We said, how do we make this that much bigger? How do we make that many people talk about us? And that's kind of something that Impact Management and some other people behind the scenes came up with.
And when you were presented with, hey, Sammy, you got to ditch the hair. You were cool?
100%.
Okay.
I really give a damn about my hair?
Hey, you've had it for a long time. It's taken you a while to grow.
I'm not the most cosmetically pleasing human being. I kind of look like a gargoyle. So anything that makes me look like more like a gargoyle, like, let's do it. Screw it.
Well, it seemed to work out. Now, you know, you're very good at competing in this hardcore style, but it does take a big toll on your body, obviously. And to know
100%.
That you know that you're going into a match with Pentagon, and obviously, you know, you're coming out of this hurt. How do you prep for something like that?
It's one of those things that you just got to be mentally prepared before you even go in there. You got to know that some might go down, and you got to be ready to deal with it.
Now, you're very good at this style. I mean, you're very good at a variety of different matches, but in particular,
I wouldn't say just that style. I think I'm very good at every style. I think I'm one of the most versatile wrestlers walking this planet today. I can do a crazy death match on one day. I can do a Lucha Libre match the next day. I can do British Strong Style the day after. I can go to Mexico, do Lucha Libre. I can do anything that I need to do, and that's what makes me dangerous as a wrestler. I can have a game plan for anyone I wrestle or any match that's presented to me.
To have a match, though, in that hardcore style, be, you know, so universally praised like it was last week, to you, is that a blessing or a curse? Because now people are just going to want it more.
I don't think it's a curse at all, because this is what I've been doing for the last 12 years. It's just now that's got on national television to the point that people can see it and actually truly know what I bring to the table. And I think this is starting to open people's eyes.
So after Slammiversary passed, you were then seen on MLW Battle Riot. Along with that, you're seen as Lucha Underground, on Lucha Underground as Jeremiah Crane.
Yeah, I'm the only guy signed to three national televised companies right now. Who else would say that in the world of wrestling ever? I'm on three national television shows, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, every week. Who else in the world can say that?
And this
people can on me all they want, but who else in the world can say that?
Well, this is what I was going to ask you, though. I mean, is it tough to go from storyline to storyline?
No, man. Like, you put someone in the ring with me, I'm going to create magic.
And as far as the characters go, are you compartmentalized in the different organizations, or are you just kind of, you go in and do your thing when you're there?
I go in and do my thing when I'm there. Like, luckily, almost every company I work for, I'm the same person, even as Jeremiah Crane. Jeremiah Crane is another extension of myself. He's a more dark, twisted, messed up individual than myself, which is hard to say because I'm pretty messed up to begin with. But it's one of those things, I go in there with the same mindset every time I'm in the ring.
Now, working with Lucha Underground, because you mentioned, yeah, it's MLW and it's Impact Wrestling and Lucha Underground, and they do a series of tapings together. Does it feel different to you because you're in a world there with such heavy production, the supernatural nature of the production? Does it feel like working on a wrestling show, or is it more so a TV production to you?
It's 100% a TV show. The only thing that's in common with a wrestling event is the fact that there's a ring and there's people fighting. Like, other than that, like, it's a straight up movie. Like, we get treated like stars. We get top hotels. We get top catering every day. We get per diem to buy food when we're out, not at the studio. Like, it truly is a movie production, and that's why it's truly different than any other company on the planet.
And is that something that you'd love to have every day, or do you like the variety of going from, you know, the different organizations and getting to work with different creatives?
I 100% like that difference. I'm a guy, I'd have to say I probably have a little bit of ADD, and I get bored real easily. Like, if I'm stuck one spot for too long, that's when I start not becoming me, and I start just really becoming normal. I never want to be normal. I want to be different than everyone else.
All right. Well, this might segue perfectly into, I do have to ask you about the WWE run. And, you know, you appeared on NXT as Solomon Crow. It seemed like a gimmick that had potential, but ultimately, in the end, it didn't go all that well. And I'm curious, was the character, let's start at the beginning, was the character presented to you, or did you go in with that idea?
Well, I'll be the first one to say, like, I don't have a lot of bad blood towards WWE. I don't think my time there was managed properly. But I'll be the first one to say, I became another cog in the system. Like, that company will survive with or without me, and with or without anyone, for that means. And I just wasn't myself. I tried to be everything they wanted me to be, and I walked on eggshells. And for lack of better terms, I became a straight-up bitch. And I will never, and I mean ever, allow that to happen again. I will stick to my guns, even if that means getting fired from a company. I will not change myself ever again and become something that I'm not, because something that I'm not doesn't make money. Me as me is good enough. Like, me as me is better than good enough. And in WWE, things just didn't click. I was in there at a weird time, and that hacker character was something that me and Dusty Rhodes came up with, but it was way different than what it was presented at the time. They really didn't know what they had, and they really didn't understand me at all, so I just became another cog in the system. I just became another generic developmental ass at the end of the day.
So in working there and in working on, you know, in the various organizations that you do now, obviously it seems like creative freedom there was non-existent. Did you have any say in putting your matches together in WWE, or was it basically all scripted out for you?
Sometimes, but a lot of times you have an agent there that's trying to push their own agendas and trying to tell you how to be you at the end of the day. They don't know what's in your mind. They don't know what you are at the end of the day. I was the only one that knew who I was. And a few selected coaches there, and I just never got the real chance to show exactly who I was, and it hurt me. It really dampened my time there. If I would have had the shackles taken off of me a little bit more and
was able to build up my body of work and show them what I did, I would have 100% would have been successful. I'd be successful in any wrestling company around the world.
And now, of course, you know, working in the industry as long as you have, and as many people do, obviously the dream of a lot of people growing up is to make it to WWE. And you having gone in there, given it your best, and then, you know, running into these roadblocks, how did you feel when it came to an end, when your time there came to an end?
It was a relief. I was ready to be out of there. I was miserable. I was depressed. And I was a shell of who I was before I got there. And I needed to leave to show them exactly what I was. And I think I've done that. I became one of the biggest stars in the world since leaving WWE.
And I think it's people like yourself, Juice Robinson, Cody Rhodes, have all really reinvented themselves after leaving WWE. And what do you attribute that? Like, what do you attribute your current success?
I think a big part of it is just me just having a chip on my shoulder and wanting to prove people wrong. That makes me hungrier than ever. It makes me work that much harder to be that much different.
Now, coming up, along with all the different things that, you know, you're doing, you're also going to be wrestling Marty Scurll on the Jericho Cruise. Did Jericho suggest that this be your opponent there, or is just you and Scurll getting together and coming up with the idea?
This is something that Jericho put together. Everything on that cruise Jericho's put together, and he's doing a damn good job if you really think about it. He set the wrestling world on fire in his 40s. There's no one else in wrestling history that has had as many runs and been able to recreate themselves as much as Chris Jericho has. And getting a chance to do what I do with Marty Scurll on one of the biggest shows of the year is going to be a straight-up barn burner. I've wrestled Marty Scurll all over the world. We've grown up with each other at the Indies, but we haven't wrestled in the last couple of years, and it's going to be way more violent than it usually is, and it's going to be a lot of people playing for keeps because neither one of them is going to want to give an inch because we know the other person's going to take a mile.
You know, you're out there right now in these three organizations, and you're getting to work a lot of people that you know, you have known, and you're working again. Who is that opponent that you're out there right now and you got your eyes set on?
I want to wrestle Tommaso Ciampa. People say he's the best heel in the business. I beg to differ. I'm the best heel in the business. I'd like to go one-on-one with Tommaso Ciampa. If one day, I think it's going to probably happen. I don't know what company. I don't know where, but it's going to happen. It's going to set the wrestling world on fire.
That it will. He's having a great run. So in looking at that, though, because you bring up that name, and I'm actually kind of surprised that you did because he's obviously where you were. It's two very different...
To be honest, I hate the time of, oh, I work for this company. I don't want to talk about this company. That's stupid. We all are in the same business. We're all trying to make money. We're all trying to make a living. Why aren't we going to give props to other companies when they're doing something right? Like, I hate this time of wrestling companies working against each other. Because at the end of the day, everyone needs to be working together to make so everyone can make that much more money and set matches at the fans on the scenes. If the fans aren't happy, then wrestling is going to fail.
I think we have seen that now. Aside from WWE, it's a very strange and new time where...
I have so many people that work for WWE that I'm close friends with. I'm just going to act like they don't exist. I hate that thought of being in a bubble of one company and pretending everything else doesn't exist because it doesn't matter. What WWE does directly affects what Impact does. What Impact does directly affects what WWE does with Ring of Honor, New Japan, everything else. What one company does, other companies are going to do. Like, everyone will be striving for that one major spot of what's going to create the buzz in this industry right now. And it's better for us all to watch each other because we all came up in the business together. I think for the first time, our generation is kind of changing the fact that we all don't need to work against each other. We all need to work together to make this business better so there is a business in 20 and 30 years.
And the funny thing is, his phone actually cut out right after he said that. But I thought it was a great point to leave off. My thanks to Sammy Callahan for taking time out this afternoon and joining us. And right now, we've got to take a time out, but I'll be back to wrap up the show and do a little bit of feedback. Next, Sunday night's main event, TSN Radio.
If you like wrestling, then your friends probably do too. And there's no better gift for a friend than a sweet wrestling t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com.
The Festival of Friendship!
From Ring of Honor, New Japan, and the Independents,
Super Kick!
To classic superstars like Shawn Michaels, Andre the Giant, and the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
The cream of the crop!
Find the perfect gift for the wrestling fan in your life at ProWrestlingTees.com.
Welcome back. It is Sunday night's main event. Yes, indeed. TSN Radio. And just finishing things up here, we're going to do some feedback. Now, each week I've been posting the feedback up on the Facebook page, so you know, find us there. It's a group, actually, so it's SNME Radio. Just search it on Facebook and click, hey, I want to be part of the group, and then I will approve you, and you can post up your feedback. So we will do that. Before we do that, though, let me click on over here. And I hit up the Twitter. I put up the Sunday night survey at the beginning of the show. And my question was, will Paul Heyman turn on Brock Lesnar around SummerSlam? Well, it looks like 77% of you bought into what happened on Monday night and have said, yes, Paul is going to turn. While 23% of you said no. I think if Brock is away for a while, then, you know, Paul is that character that always tries to get his revenge. And then, so Paul aligns with someone. Someone beats up Brock. Brock then goes off to the UFC, does his thing there with Cormier, which will be bananas great. I can't wait for that. And then comes on back to WWE and has a babyface run where he is going after Paul, and it's like the old-time Heenan family thing, where Paul's just throwing out guy after guy after guy, maybe. Or there's just one guy, and then Brock comes back as the baby face. It will work, especially if Paul Heyman is in charge of it, it will work. I have a tremendous amount of faith in Paul Heyman. Okay, over to the feedback. One that came in during the show, Randy wrote, totally agree with you on the progressive. This is in regards to the characters and being more serious, perhaps offensive characters. But Randy says, totally agree with you on the progressive. That's why Velveteen Dream and Dalton Castle work so well. They don't go out of their way to say anything so that they can be perceived in many different directions by many. It's brilliant, really. Yeah, I thought Dalton really did a good job at this. I remember seeing him very early on at a Ring of Honor show. And the fact that this character, this flamboyant character that Dalton Castle plays in wrestling history is normally a heel, like the early Goldust character, right? But Dalton is a babyface using that flamboyant character, which I loved the flip and the take on that. I really feel I'm actually trying to get Dalton on the show because I really feel I'm disappointed for him once he was able to get the Ring of Honor championship and just had injury after injury after injury. And it's so unfortunate because I was just such a fan of his character. And there was actually a few years ago when he was, I guess not just starting out, but he was in Ring of Honor and on the undercard, we did a lunch for listeners when we did live audio wrestling and Dalton Castle was there and just got to sit down and chat with him. And he's just a super nice guy. So it's just unfortunate that he got injured so badly when he finally managed to nab that title. All right, let's do a bit of your feedback here. As I was mentioning, all of this up on the Facebook group. Mario says WWE dropped the ball on Bobby Roode. A year later, he went from headlining NXT Brooklyn to feuding with Mojo Rawley and most likely not even making it to the kickoff. He needs a heel turn fast. Yeah, Bobby Roode has needed a heel turn. He's just a better heel. I was talking about Charlotte earlier in the show. I think Charlotte is a better heel. I think Bobby Roode is a better heel. Since Bobby Roode has entered WWE, I think he's been overly dependent on a song and a catchphrase. Glorious. It's a great song. I mean, I use it all the time. I love it. I listen to it. It's fun. But talk about one-dimensional. And it looks like WWE is actually not a rocket, but attaching a mini rocket onto Mojo Rawley now. He also continues to say, what's up with Sasha and Bayley? So there we talked about that a little bit earlier in the show, Sasha and Bayley. All right, let's move on to Tobias here. And Tobias says, the triple threat buildups for the NXT title and tag belts both seem clumsy. Based on several recent NXT call-ups underachieving, Asuka, Rude, AOP, and Almas, is NXT a separate program or development? It does not seem to be bringing much to the main programming in the last 12 months. Full Sail favorites seem to often crash and burn on the main roster. Well, that's the booking. That's the booking of, I don't understand why the mentality does not exist of, this character worked on NXT, let's do it again. Let's expose that character that is already successful to a greater audience. Instead, the mentality seems to be on the main roster, yeah, that worked, but now let's make it work for, let's change it to make it work for the main roster. And I think we've seen that in the way you mentioned Asuka Rude, Authors of Pain, and Almas. Well, Asuka went on that undefeated streak, seemed to be doing okay, and then totally tanked her, and making her speak and do longer promos is not her strength. Rude, just talked about him and the problems there. Authors of Pain, talked about that earlier in the show. That was easy. Leave the manager and let them destroy people. That doesn't even take a thought. And Almas, oh, I've been all over Almas on this show. Even what Almas is involved in now, he's in this Rusev program, and I was looking forward to that. But the program with Almas and Rusev has nothing to do with Almas. It just has to do with Rusev, Lana breaking up and losing their accents. And Aiden English breaking away from the three of them. That's really what it has to do with. Zelina Vega and Almas are just kind of sitting off to the side. They're there for a conduit to have the other guys break up. I hate it. I hate it. But it's the booking. It doesn't have to be this way. But I think we can all see that. Michael writes in and says, looking back through all the SummerSlams in history, what is truly your personal favorite that holds a special place in your heart? Michael says, for him, it's SummerSlam 1991. For me, and it's funny, I read this earlier because I wanted to have one ready. It's SummerSlam 2004. The reason is, it was here in Toronto. And of course, rarely do I get to attend things because I've been doing this show on Sunday nights. So even when things are live, like Survivor Series was live, I didn't get to go. Because I was doing the show. I don't get to go to WrestleManias because I'm doing the show. Well, I went to SummerSlam 2004 because the studio we were at, and actually being at this studio now, the new one that I'm at, is going to allow for the same type of thing. But the studio we were at that time was downtown. So I went with Lavransky. We sat together. And we knew we had to do a show afterwards. I guess I knew we had to do a show afterwards. This did not stop Lavransky from having a whole bunch of beers. And we went on, and after SummerSlam, I think it was Chris Benoit, Randy Orton, something like that. But after that SummerSlam card, we went on the air and we yelled at each other, just yelled at each other for 2 hours and got the most feedback we have ever gotten for a show about our behavior with one another after that show. So that's why it holds a very fond place in my heart, SummerSlam 2004. And listen, speaking of SummerSlam, speaking of Lavransky, let me do this before the end of the show. If you've looked at our Patreon, it's not where I was hoping it's going to be. I'm going to be completely honest with you guys right now. There's a lot of people that listen to the show. There's a lot of people that download the podcast. And I'd love to have Mouth back every week. At this point, I'm hoping to hit goal number 2. So he's back 2 out of 4. But we need your help. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. If you enjoy the show, if you're on the fence about jumping on in, then please do. Don't leave it to someone else. Do it yourself. Support the show. And we'll get Lavransky back, hoping he will be back for the SummerSlam show. We got this studio in downtown Toronto that makes it easier for all of us to get around as well. So that is fantastic. Along with that, SummerSlam this weekend, the SummerSlam of this year coming up, August 17th is when things are going to kick off. Friday night, 11 p.m. at Comedy Bar. Come on down and see Summer Strikes. RJ City performing, Nug Nargang performing. It's Whose Line Is It Anyway meets Fear Factor, and it is awesome. And one more thing, another way you can contribute to the show, got a business, got a company, want to advertise? Jason@SundayNightsMainEvent.com is where you can send that email and open the conversation. Back here next Sunday at 11 p.m. And as Billy Red Lions always used to say, don't you dare miss it.